Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, July 18th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Cougar Fire in southern Assotin County burned structures. The Texas Fire in rural Latah County near Kendrick is 1,500 acres. Avian flu at farm and food production facilities in 9 Idaho counties shows signs of declining for now, but that could change as migratory birds come back to Idaho for the winter. Lewiston Library adds questions to state-mandated book banning form, and we'll hear the Idaho Democrats' climate resolution. Details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. An Idaho doctor who co-wrote the book Preparing for the Next Global Outbreak is watching the avian flu outbreak, which is impacting dairy producers across the U.S. and in southern Idaho. The doctor says infectious disease experts should prepare more than they are now in case the avian flu outbreak becomes dangerous to human health. Dr. David Pate, who is retired St. Luke's Health System CEO, wrote Preparing for the Next Global Outbreak with Dr. Ted Epperle of Boise. Pate told the Idaho Press, "I don't know if this will turn out to be a pandemic, but we're watching all the ingredients and we're watching that sequence. Certainly, if you were planning out how we think a pandemic would occur, this is what you would be planning out." So far, Idaho agriculture officials and dairy producers are monitoring animal health, enforcing rules for quarantining infected animals, providing workers with personal protective equipment, and offering to test farm workers who may have been exposed. The state health department is providing information and support for those who want to protect workers, but state epidemiologist and Division of Health Medical Director Christine Hahn says much of what happens is up to farm and dairy operators. Hahn said dairy operators, dairy workers, always operate in a world where they have to take care of themselves for infectious conditions. Cows have other germs they can spread, so they already have protocols in place. The latest U.S. Department of Agriculture tallies for avian flu infections in Idaho are from July 3rd. The USDA says 27 cattle herds in Idaho have been impacted by the avian flu strain called H5N1. Ag officials first detected the strain in the U.S. in March, and since then they have found it in 140 cattle herds nationwide. There are 4 confirmed reports of the avian flu strain infecting humans, which occurred in Texas, Michigan, and Colorado. One of the cases showed up as mild respiratory illness, and the other showed up as mild eye symptoms. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says pasteurizing milk by heating it deactivates the virus, meaning people cannot get infected by consuming pasteurized commercial milk. According to Idaho Dairymen's Association CEO Rick Nairbout, as of July 12th, there were 18 facilities in 9 Idaho counties under quarantine for the virus. Nairbout says producers feel Idaho may have reached a peak in infections, and there are signs the spread of the virus is slowing, but that could change as migratory birds start returning to the state for the winter. Idaho Department of Agriculture State Veterinarian Dr. Scott Liebsley says testing has found N5H1 in wild birds near the impacted dairies in Idaho. Liebsley said it's not clear which species is infecting which. Dr. Pate says H5N1 does not spread to humans easily, and those people who had the virus were in prolonged contact with infected animals. He also said the virus does not seem to spread from human to human. However, it can be deadly. The World Health Organization reports 890 people worldwide have been infected with bird flu since 2003, and more than 50% of those infected died. Most of the deaths were in Egypt, Indonesia, and Vietnam. By comparison, COVID-19 killed about 1.7% of those infected. He said, "This is about 52%, so you can see we're talking about a whole different level of severity." Pate also said many of the reported cases and deaths were in younger, healthier people. However, he says it's difficult to pin down an actual fatality rate without mass testing because only people with severe symptoms are tested. He said state agriculture officials in Michigan have run antibody tests on farm workers to see if they had previous symptomless infections. Avian flu has been found in sea lions and sea elephants in South America, foxes in Canada and France, as well as in other animals. Pate said it was disturbing because the more animal species that get infected, the more the virus can mutate. Pate said it's time to prepare but not panic. He said, "We almost never see any of the steps that lead up to a pandemic. We know the kinds of viruses are likely to cause pandemics or are higher up on our list, but we rarely see any of the steps until it starts in humans." The Cougar Creek Fire in southern Assotin County has spread to about 3,100 acres as of Wednesday night and was 0% contained. A complex incident management team was scheduled to take over management of firefighting efforts Thursday morning, and they will use a command center at Lincoln Middle School in Clarkston Heights. The fire had burned just over 3,000 acres as of Wednesday night and was 0% contained. There are still Stage 3 evacuation orders, which means leave immediately, and Stage 2 evacuation orders, which means get ready to leave at a moment's notice, in effect for parts of southern Assotin County. Fire officials have asked boaters on the Snake River to stay away from where airplanes are dipping buckets into the river to drop water on the fire. Level 3 evacuation orders are in effect from the mouth of Cottonwood Creek north to Forest Road number 4034 west to the Assotin County line. The Lewiston Tribune website reports residents in the area say several structures have burned in the Cougar Creek fire, including an uninhabited farmhouse built in the 1800s and the former Hanson Ridge Post Office. Carl Flynn of Assotin told the news outlet he used to live in the house after his father purchased it in 1953, but it's burned to the ground now. He says the Flynns more recently used the house for weekend stays when they were harvesting hay in the area. Flynn said the old post office was used for storage. As of Thursday morning, the Texas fire on Texas Ridge northeast of Kendrick in Latah County had grown to 1,500 acres and was 0% contained. The Lewiston Tribune website reports firefighters have built lines around the main fire and a spot fire to the east. Plane and helicopters are dropping water and fire retardant near the intersection of Texas Ridge Road and Cedar Ridge Road. About 100 ground crews are constructing fire lines and laying hoses. Fire crews were expected to receive more resources sometime Thursday. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is sponsored by Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine, such as gyros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh, located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
Two congressional Democrats from Washington renewed their efforts to close all for-profit federal immigration facilities. U.S. Representatives Pramila Jayapal and Adam Smith say they wrote a letter to Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas because Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is under Homeland Security, recently announced they were closing a detention facility in Texas that holds undocumented people but plans to expand immigration detention overall. The letter comes days after U.S. Senator Patty Murray of Washington, also a Democrat, requested federal auditors investigate the state of health care services at the privately run Northwest ICE Processing Center, which is a detention facility in Tacoma. Jayapal and Smith's letter says, "We are deeply troubled that ICE plans to use the cost savings from this closure to expand the use of immigration detention, in particular facilities operated by private, for-profit prison companies." The letter notes a Physicians for Human Rights report found 95% of the deaths in Immigration and Customs Enforcement custody between 2017 and 2021 were preventable, and that 13 of the 15 detention centers with the highest number of deaths during the period were run by corporate contractors. The GEO Group owns the Northwest ICE Processing Center detention facility in Tacoma and another similar lockup in California. The letter says, "Some of the most egregious abuses of immigrants occurred in detention facilities run by private companies. Unnecessary medical interventions, forced labor, abuse of solitary confinement, and intimidation have run rampant at privately operated detention centers." Immigration detention is meant to be civil in nature, not punitive. Yet immigrants detained by ICE in facilities increasingly operated by private prison companies face punishing conditions and neglect that some do not survive. The Washington State Standard reports University of Washington researchers say the Tacoma facility uses solitary confinement more than any other immigration detention facility in the country. In March, 61-year-old detainee Charles Leo Daniel died in solitary confinement there, which ICE tends to call segregation. The Pierce County Medical Examiner released a report saying Daniel died of natural causes related to high blood pressure and cardiovascular disease. Representatives Jayapal and Smith have co-sponsored the Dignity for Detained Immigrants Act, which stalled in 2022 and again in 2023. If passed, the law would increase oversight and transparency at federal immigration detention centers. A report from the American Civil Liberties Union found 91% of those in immigration detention nationwide in July of last year were held in facilities operated by private companies, which is up from 81% in 2020. The Lewiston City Library Board has voted to add additional questions to the form the new state library law requires them to make available in case a patron wants to challenge the existence of a book in a section of the library for teens or children. The questions may help determine whether someone requesting the removal of a book is doing it as part of a widespread smear campaign against the book. According to the Lewiston Tribune, one of the questions is whether a minor checked out material the complainant believes is harmful by themselves or with the consent of a parent or guardian. Another question asks whether the parent or legal guardian read, watched, or listened to the entire work, and if a minor read, listened to, or watched the material, and if the minor was accompanied by a parent, legal guardian, or adult representing as a legal guardian at checkout. The Lewiston City Library's version of the form clarifies what the new law does and does not do, which City Library Director Lynn Johnson said there's a lot of misinformation about. Idaho's new library law creates a statewide policy for reviewing materials that could be considered harmful to minors if a patron challenges the book. Under the law, officials have 60 days to remove or relocate the book to an adults-only section if the library has one. If the book is not removed, the library could face a $250 fine and the patron could sue for damages. The law went into effect Monday, July 1st. Board member Josh Brown said even if the questions the Lewiston Library Board is adding to the state-required form do not pertain directly to the new law, called the Children's School and Library Protection Act, he and other board members agreed it would give library officials the ability to put the request in context. Library Director Johnson said it would help the library know if the person requesting the book's removal was doing so because of one line in the book. Johnson said, "I think it gets right to the heart of it and is much more clear than what we were asking." Library Board Chair Diana Ames said it was a balancing act. Board Member Andy Hansen said, "We're trying to comply with the law and protect all patron rights." After the board approved the new form, Ames said, "The board has done a good job of getting way ahead of this as far as we can with this policy. Now we get to wait and see." We're moving through the resolutions Idaho Democratic Party Convention delegates passed during their convention in Moscow, May 23rd. Besides passing a state party platform, Idaho Democrats passed 9 resolutions, including one on climate policy, which passed unanimously. Here's Party Platform Committee Vice Chair Terry Pickens reading the resolution.
"Whereas there is worldwide scientific consensus that the Earth's climate is warming due to the high concentration of greenhouse gases in the Earth's atmosphere that have accumulated from predominantly wealthy countries over the past 150 years, and whereas scientists predict that global warming will increase drought periods, wildfire intensity, and extreme heat days across Idaho for the rest of the century, whereas countries like the U.S. that became wealthy through unrestricted and climate pollution have a moral responsibility to reduce carbon emissions while supporting more vulnerable countries to adapt to climate change with non-polluting technologies. Whereas Idaho irrigators increasingly face water curtailments due to a declining groundwater supply caused by milder winters that yield more rain than snow, higher evapotranspiration rates, and more extreme heat days each summer. Whereas the climate justice movement demands an equitable transition to a less polluting, carbon-free economy that is fair to low-income and marginalized communities who are enduring greater economic hardships and health impacts due to climate change. Whereas climate change clearly represents an existential threat to Idaho, Idaho's natural resources, and all communities that depend upon them, including sovereign tribes. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Idaho Democratic Party advocates for actions and policies that will rapidly reduce carbon emissions and equitably mitigate anticipated climate impacts as the state transitions to a carbon-free economy. And be it further resolved that the Idaho Democratic Party calls for conjunctively managing the state's limited water resources, encouraging effective aquifer recharge, and resolving irrigation water disputes within the tenets of Idaho Water Law. And be it further resolved that the Idaho Democratic Party will support sustainability policies that promote intersectional climate justice, energy efficiency, waste reduction, good-paying unionized climate jobs, clean water, food security through."
That was Idaho Democratic Party Platform Committee Vice Chair Terry Pickens reading the resolution on climate change that delegates at the state convention in Moscow passed June 23rd.
More than $27 million is coming to upgrade forests in the Northwest for recreation. The investment is the latest round of funding from the Great American Outdoors Act, which was passed in 2020 and established the National Parks and Public Land Legacy Restoration Fund. The legislation is aimed to address the backlog of maintenance needed on public lands. Tracy Calazon with the U.S. Forest Service Pacific Northwest region says 23 projects across national forests in Oregon and Washington were chosen.
That is for fixing campgrounds, replacing toilets, updating trailheads, signage, kiosks, parks, roads, providing access and accessibility improvements, really at the sites that the public knows and loves across National Forest of the Pacific Northwest.
There are now 76 Legacy Restoration Fund projects in the Northwest, with 18 of them completed. The U.S. Forest Service says the Great American Outdoors Act has brought $77 million in contracts to Oregon and Washington to complete these projects. Calazon says there are many elements to maintaining the country's forests.
It's not necessarily only the trailheads or the public-facing infrastructure. It's also the infrastructure to support the whole picture and make sure that we have the staff to be able to provide these great opportunities.
The Great American Outdoors Act is working to address the country's $8.6 billion deferred maintenance backlog on public lands. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Nearly 10,000 Montanans have petitioned the U.S. Forest Service to prevent mining activity in the iconic Smith River watershed. The Smith is known for its majestic views and numerous wildlife species, but it's also a huge draw for outdoor enthusiasts seeking to disconnect. The Smith River Public Lands Coalition has called on the Forest Service to withdraw mineral leases granted to a company planning a $4 billion copper mine on private land near Sheep Creek, which feeds the Smith more than half of its water. Bozeman-based river guide Josh Seckinger estimates he's floated the five-day, 59-mile-long Smith 100 times. He thinks the copper sulfide mine drainage would be devastating.
It just decimates anything with gills downstream. So that's fish, that's amphibians, that's aquatic bug life. It's a terrible way to sterilize a river.
Mine developer Black Butte Copper says it is committed to preserving Montana's water while creating economic development opportunities in the state and claims it can build the mine in an environmentally friendly way. Seckinger says beyond the environmental and wildlife damage the mine drainage could cause, it also threatens the local landscape and the recreational economy built around the Smith River. He says that isn't just a hit to the businesses, but to Montanans who want to experience the trip. It requires winning a permit in a state lottery.
And it is my hope that every resident of this state puts in for a lottery permit and wins so they get the chance to experience this place. Because once you experience it, you understand immediately why it needs to be protected.
Black Butte Copper has bought nearly 700 claims on the public land surrounding the one near Sheep Creek, potentially allowing the company to further expand its mining operations. This is Mark Moran for Big Sky Connection.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, the National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat warning, which will be in effect for eastern and central Washington and northern and north central Idaho from 11 a.m. Saturday until 8 p.m. on Monday. It replaces the heat advisory that was scheduled to expire on Sunday night. The excessive heat warning says very hot temperatures, high temperatures in the valleys between 95 and 103 on Friday, 97 and 107 on Saturday, between 100 and 110 Sunday and Monday, lows in the mid-60s to mid-70s. Heat will increase the risk of heat-related illnesses, especially those without effective cooling or adequate hydration. Drink plenty of fluids, stay in an air-conditioned room, stay out of the sun, and check up on relatives and neighbors. Forecast for the Moscow Pullman area is calling for mostly clear skies through at least Tuesday of next week. Low 60 tonight, highs 95 tomorrow, 98 Saturday, 104 Sunday, 99 Monday, and 87 on Tuesday. Lows will be 62 Friday and Saturday night, 64 Sunday night, and 59 Monday night. Current temperature is 91 degrees. For the Lewiston-Clarkston Valley, The predicted temperatures are a low of 73 tonight and highs of 106 tomorrow, 110 on Saturday, and 114 on Sunday, 110 on Monday. And the current temperature in Lewiston is 102 degrees. Air quality in the region is moderate at this hour. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Flashpoints is up next, followed by Appearing Locally, where we feature music from musical artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the next couple weeks. At 8 o'clock, Maximum Rock and Roll, and 9 o'clock, the Academy's in with Not Dark Yet, playing music for you 9 to 11. At 11 o'clock, recorded jam band concerts with The Ride till 1 a.m. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is sponsored by Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine, such as Euros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh. Located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.